Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And Bill is down at the Shasta County Fairgrounds selling tractors today. Mostly he's standing in the rain, actually. If we want to be accurate in our reporting, he's mostly just standing in the rain. But we just finished a stressful hour. We decided it was good that there were no bars nearby, even though it's a little early in the day. Actually,
there is one down the street.
No, we're not going to talk about that. We had Casey Johnson on with us about the campus rape frenzy, and it was enough to light your hair on fire. So please go to the archives if you missed that and need to have your hair lit on fire. I did meet a guy who does take medication to raise his blood pressure. I thought, oh, my gosh. We have a program for him. He no longer needs medication.
I was going to say, he could get off his meds if he just listened to us.
Absolutely. He could just be done with that whole thing. So our second hour, as if that was...
By the way, if Tractor Bill were here, he would tell you that the program is sponsored by...
By Powerhouse Solar, Bruce and Sue Blake. They were founded in 2003. They've grown into the North State's premier solar company. You can find them at 275-5600. That is area code 530. And online, powerhousesolar.com. Ta-da! Okay. Thanks, Bob. Thanks for being the dad. Keeping us on track here.
Between us, we'll cover for Bill.
Exactly. All right. So as if the first hour was not stressful enough, we're going to talk about another new book called DC Confidential, Inside the Five Tricks of Washington. Okay, the good news is we're only talking about five tricks, so we probably won't have anyone's head explode, but I've never met our guest, so we'll see about that. David Schoenbrod, yes?
Exactly.
No!
You got it right.
I wrote to Steve, and I'm like, yikes, panic attack at midnight. I forgot to find out how his name is pronounced, because it's S-C-H-O-E-N-B-R-O-D, which is tricky.
Right.
Schoenbrod.
So, a problem my whole life.
Well, my husband's last name is Cundiff, C-U-N-D-I-F-F. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is why I'm Aaron Ryan. So yeah, I guess you could, you know, take your wife's name or something and get out of it, but yeah, probably not. So, okay, DC Confidential showed up for you. Why? Like, what made you want to do this? Besides the frustration of watching Washington.
Because these five tricks apply to everything government does, it made my hair go on fire.
Oh, there you go.
And that's what got me going on this thing. I mean, listen, we all know that politicians are tricksters. So how do they get away with promising something for nothing or very little? That's what interested me. And the answer is for the same reason that magicians can seem to pull rabbits out of hats. We don't see the sleights of hand, even though we do know they're tricksters. So what I try to do in this book is reveal the sleights of hand, and they came through a new system that Congress and the presidents of both parties began to develop in the late 1960s, and this new system uses five tricks that lets them make rosy promises but avoid blame for bad consequences.
Interesting.
And that's why we have such a crummy government.
Interesting.
I mean, before these tricks began, 76% of voters trusted our government to do the right thing. Now only 19% do. And that's because the government ain't doing the right thing.
Well, and it can't be helping that we have, 7,000 channels with 24-hour fear porn playing. You know, I mean, it just, we're not actually getting a lot of news. In a lot of cases, we're getting all sorts of crazy stuff. So,
right, but think about where that comes from. I mean, if what these people that we elect were doing was making hard choices about trade-offs, then there'd be real news. I mean, I remember when I was a youngster, and I'm sure I'm much older than you, the congressional elections would be decided... What?
I'm 55, so...
I'm a generation older than you.
Okay.
I remember when congressional elections were decided on the basis of hard choices that officials made about laws. Now, they don't really vote on hard choices. They vote on, I'm against pollution killing children, or I'm against regulation killing jobs. But they never talk about the inevitable trade-offs between them. And so they're just talking about sound bites. So that's why we don't have any real news.
True. And, well, back in the day, too, I mean, even when I was a kid, news was on for like an hour. Because I remember we couldn't, you know, I mean, we had to listen to my dad yell at the TV for an hour. And, you know, I mean, it's like, oh, good, the news is on. But it stopped. I mean, it went on, and then it was gone. And so they had to crush all the information of the day into an hour. So they really had to be picky. And now they're just kind of, you know, talking to hear their heads roar 24 hours a day. And a lot of, I mean, I love these ones where we have a big storm and they want to talk about the big storm. Now, it hasn't even come yet, but we're going to talk about the big storm for 3 days beforehand.
I got my complaints about media too, but I think the ultimate problem here is that a republic is based upon, number one, our electing officials, and
right.
number two, the officials that we elect making the major decisions of policy and being responsible for the consequences.
Correct.
And the second part is gone. So I don't care what kind of news you got.
Yeah, true.
We don't have a government that responds to us.
So talk. I don't know where you want to start with this. Which way do you want to go? You want to talk about the five tricks? Because I have those listed. I never have this much information.
Yeah,
it's kind of fun.
That's a good place to start.
All right. Fire away.
Okay, well, the first of them is what I call the money trick. And a half century ago, it began to work in Washington. The trip began a half century ago, where politicians began to promise us future medical care or tax cuts or whatever, but they began to hide the costs. In the past, they didn't hide the costs because they had to impose the taxes to pay for the stuff.
Right, but now they can defer it, you know, till later.
Kick the can down the road. They let their successors in office be responsible for either the tax increases or spending cuts needed to make ends meet in the long run. And you can contrast what they're doing here with what Congress requires of money lenders. A money lender can't make a loan without revealing in writing to the borrower how much they're going to have to pay in the long run. Well, Congress doesn't really provide us with that information, so we don't really know how much our taxes are going to have to go up or the benefits going to go down to make ends meet. And if we knew that, we could hold them accountable for the costs of the promises they're making now.
Sure,
and
because those things should kick in today, not 5 years or seven. I guess I'm thinking specifically of, the Affordable Care Act thing. I mean, there are a whole bunch of things kicking in this year and next. Well, if they would have been there the first year, then it would have, you know, it would have been a far worse deal. It would have been slightly more obvious, I guess.
Absolutely.
And there are a zillion examples.
There's a lot of costs they have taken, you know, because they have the Congressional Budget Office. They order it to do a lot of the accounting in terms of what's going to happen over the next 10 years, because they're pretending to be responsible for the future. But they structure a lot of stuff so the costs occur more than 10 years from now, but the revenues come in earlier.
Right. So it looks like it's going great, and then it starts to implode, and people wonder why.
Right. Yeah. If a private corporation kept books the way the federal government did, they'd be put in jail under the fraud provisions of the Securities and Exchange Act. So I want to have the same kind of requirements that Congress applies to money lenders and corporations apply to Congress, so they reveal to us up front the costs of what they're, the long-term costs of what they're giving us now.
Sure.
Simple, obvious problem, obvious solution. And I got a proposed statute called the Honest Deal Act that requires them to solve this, to stop this trick and the other tricks with analogously easy,
sure,
obvious ways.
Well, okay, so we have to take a really quick break, but what I'm thinking is, okay, for the most part, I think all of us can figure out that if they're deferring cost until later so it looks nice now but it looks crummy later, I mean, we can all figure out why that happens. When we come back, I'd like to know if there are any instances where that was done for a good reason, other than just some sort of sleight of hand, because you've researched it longer than I have. So
yeah.
We're going to draw upon your experience. We're going to be right back. You are listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We will be right back with the author of DC Confidential, Inside the Five Tricks of Washington.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. give a damn's busted. Oh, promises, they're kind of promises, can't just destroy your life. Oh, promises, those kind of promises take all the joy from life. Oh, promises, promises, my kind of promises can lead to joy and hope and love.
And who was that?
Dionne Warwick.
Oh, how did I not know that? Good one. We've moved into show tunes. It's fantastic. we're here with our guest, David.
We don't do 60s too often, but that was one of her early hits.
We do a lot of 70s. So now we're into 60s. That's fun. So David Schoenbrod has written a book called DC Confidential. And I forgot to tell you a little bit about him. He's a renowned policy expert and author of the new book, DC Confidential. He is trustee professor of law at New York Law School. He is the leader of Natural Resources Defense Council, heading campaigns to get the lead out of gasoline, protect the environment in Puerto Rico, and protect New Yorkers from automotive air pollution. And here we go. You've been Wall Street Journal, New York Times, other newspapers. You have other books, Power Without Responsibility. Kind of sounds like similar. Democracy by Decree, Saving the Environment from Washington, and Breaking the Logjam. That's kind of awesome. You've been a busy bee.
Yeah. Scribble, scribble, scribble.
We'll just encapsulate that. You've been a busy bee. So is there ever a time when they push the cost off until later, but there's a reason we did that and it was actually not bad?
Yeah. I mean, the cost of fighting World War II. I mean, we borrowed a lot of money in order to win the war, but after the war, Congress began to run some surpluses for a while, and the debt as a share of gross national product went down substantially. And one could argue, and I don't have any question that that would make sense. There are other cases where Congress spent money but didn't come up with the taxes to pay for everything, like dealing with the Great Depression, and that's somewhat more controversial. But my point here is not that Congress in any one instance or not should shift blame to future Congresses for the cost of things it's doing now. My point is they ought to be just open with us about what the costs are.
Sure.
To give us an accounting of how much we're going to have to pay. Then the voters could decide whether this is appropriate. But what they're doing now is hiding the cost, which biases government to do more stuff. So we got a bigger government that's less responsive to our interests.
Sure, and it looks like it's not really hurting us because the pain is coming later.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It really is hurting us, and the bigger that debt gets, the more the pain has a present impact. And as I'm sure your voters understand, that if the government keeps kicking the can down the road, ultimately there's going to have to be huge tax increases and spending cuts in the future that are going to imperil the ability of our children to earn a living.
Yep.
They're going to imperil our Medicare and Social Security and crash the economy. So we got to begin to deal with it now. So I want an accounting from them as to what it's going to cost and how much more it's going to cost if they keep putting it off. And they could do that, and that's what my Honest Deal Act would tell them to do.
Yeah, take a snapshot of where we are and how much is this really going to cost us going forward.
Exactly, and I want it reported in terms of what it's going to do to the average family, because they can send us a letter every year from Social Security telling us how much they're going to give us. Well, tell us how much it's going to cost us. We may find out it's going to cost us more than that Social Security check to get the Social Security check.
Right, right. Well, and there are all these things, it seems, that, you know, we want, and I'm going to use the term we loosely, but, you know, we want more and more and more. We want the government to do more and more and more. And yet nobody seems to be factoring in that somebody's got to pay for that.
Right. So, I mean, the consequence of these five tricks, every one of them, is government ends up doing more. I mean, another trick I call the federal mandate trick is where they order the states and local governments to do stuff, things that are popular. So Congress gets the credit for the popular stuff getting delivered to us. But in this instance, they shift the blame to state and local officials.
Sure. And so what's the example that's in your mind about that?
Well, the Clean Air Act says that unless the state cleans the air the way the federal EPA says it should be cleaned, the state loses the federal highway grant, which is just awfully punishing to the state, especially since the state taxpayers paid for it through their federal taxes.
Right.
So the federal government, the states have to knuckle under.
So the
credit goes to, once again, the credit goes to members of Congress, and the blame gets shifted elsewhere to the state officials who are going to have to impose the burdensome regulations.
Sure. And then a lot of times the federal funding runs out on these types of things, and the states are left to continue to shoulder it. Same with counties and towns. I mean, we see.
Yeah. Well, like, for example, with the Clean Air Act, there is some federal funding to pay for the regulatory officials at the state level, but there's nothing to make up for the blame that the governor has to bear for imposing the regulations on the industry and the blame and the jobs that are lost. So in that instance, it isn't the lack of, and then on a number of the other mandates where the states have to do things like provide special ed or something like that.
Sure.
The feds don't really pay for most of the cost.
No.
So the blame for the cost falls on the state officials.
Whether they can afford it or not. And they have
no
ability to modify that or disregard it because it's a one-size-fits-all mandate you must do.
Exactly. So instead of having what states and localities do respond to the wishes of their own voters, they respond to what's laid down in Washington, often by federal regulatory agencies.
Yes, and we have plenty of those, don't we?
Mm-hmm. That's another trick, the regulation trick, where Congress promises rights, us rights to whatever kind of regulatory protection seemed popular at the time, but the blame for the burdens needed to make that happen, that falls on the agency because Congress tells the agency to impose the duties needed to fulfill the rights. So again, Congress gets the credit, the agencies, somebody else gets the blame.
Yeah, and what about the agencies that have sort of, you know, we've watched them over the last, you know, decade or so, they sort of are swinging a bigger stick and charging out on their own a little bit. Like, what do you think about this, you know, the new effort to cut back on federal regulation?
I hear what you're saying. Okay, so it is true that agencies have a degree of discretion, so they could do more or less with the powers that Congress has given them. But President Trump could take care of that by appointing people to run these agencies that share his regulatory philosophy.
Right.
So you have to ask yourself the question, why else then does he need this executive order that says that agencies must cut out two regulations for every one they issue? Well, that's kind of saying, isn't it, that the fault lies with the agencies, even agencies run by people I, President Trump, appoint, right? But think about why the agencies do so much stuff. It isn't just that they are run by over-aggressive regulators. It's that Congress and past presidents have ordered the agencies to do stuff. Like, for example, in the Clean Air Act, there's 940 separate commands to the EPA administrator to regulate. And
wow.
Many of these commands require dozens of different regulations. So Congress and the president end up blaming and this is true under Democrats and Republicans, they blame the agency for the regulatory burdens, but most of the time, Congress required them to impose the burdens.
Sure. And then on the flip side, like I can think of one, this one just always sticks in me. Here you have a rider that was put in, and I think it was in an appropriations bill, I forget, but it was one sentence that said that the Army Corps of Engineers could not regulate ongoing farming. Because out here where we are, every time you get a you know, quasi-flat piece of ground and you have a little dent in it and some water collects, the Army Corps of Engineers wants to regulate whether they can grow wheat or whatever. I mean, it's
right.
Been farming ground for 100 years. So this thing passes that they're no longer allowed to regulate ongoing farming practices. So they jack up farmers in our area here in far northern California. The congressional office goes to the Army Corps of Engineers. They all have a sit down and they say, hey, look, here's this one sentence. because people are always saying how the rules are too complicated, the bills are too long, blah, blah, blah. Well, here's one sentence, pretty straightforward. And the Army Corps of Engineers said that's not how they read that.
Oh, God.
That was their response. That's not how we read that. So they're going to keep doing what they're going to be doing. And it's like, oh, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
But the regulatory framework has turned into just a monster. It's got a life of its own.
Absolutely. And you got to ask yourself the question, why? And the answer is that the politicians want to get credit for the vote with the voters who want more who want regulatory protection. So, I mean, the point is we resent the burdens of regulation, but also many voters want regulatory protection. And because the incentives of the members of Congress are all to get credit and shift blame, they don't write the statutes in a way that does a reasonable job of reconciling our competing desires for regulatory protection and avoiding regulatory burdens. So we get an unduly complex system, the kind of system that has 940 separate commands on air pollution to EPA. It's woefully complicated, woefully overexpensive. It's just truly a stupid system.
Right.
And they don't fix it because all the blame for all the bad consequences fall on the agency.
Sure. Well,
so, I mean, this is what prompted me to write the present book, is I got together with a whole bunch of other folks on the left and right who thought that our environmental statutes were obsolete and stupid, and we came up with a set of proposals for how to update them to make them smarter. And we went to members of Congress, and Democrats and Republicans, and they all said, you know, we think your proposals are great. We wish they were on the statute books. But, you know, my colleagues in Congress, they don't really want to be responsible. So we're not going to pass these things.
Wow.
That's what got me to write this book.
Yeah, no kidding. That'd be like, wait a minute, what? Yeah, because if they're,
it's all in terms of what distressing. It does for them, not in terms of what it does for their constituents.
Sure, and for those, I don't know, I mean, we see it a lot with our natural resources up here, but if anybody even mentions that they're going to look at EPA regulation, for instance, everybody freaks out. They're trying to get rid of the EPA. If they talk about Social Security, just all you have to do is mention it. And, phones all light on fire everywhere. They're getting rid of Social Security for everyone. We're all going to die. It's just, so touching it, touching these things is a risk.
Well, the thing is, I think that we, the people, would like more sensible arrangements, but the politicians, from their point of view, it's irrational to take responsibility, because if they take responsibility for hard choices, they're going to be up against an opponent who is going to, you know, be willing to play the tricks and blame them for, the opponent's going to say, I'm for something for nothing. I'm going to give you something for nothing or very little.
Yeah.
And this guy here is imposing some burdens on you. You ought to vote for me. But if we change the rules of the game so they all have to be more honest,
sure,
then
that makes
we're going to get better policy.
Well, the other thing, too, is the larger we make and the more unaccountable we make the bureaucracy, the more these people just dig in. Like, we have a big dam here, Shasta Dam. It holds back 25 miles of water, so it's a big facility. It's a hydroelectric dam. They've talked about raising the level of the dam, and I didn't realize how long that had been going on. So I was at a meeting and Bureau of Reclamation, and this lady's talking about it. And I was like, how long have you guys been working on this anyway? And I'm thinking a few years. 34. 34 of years.
Sure.
I mean, there are people who've grown up, had children, and their kids are in college now.
Yeah, but the reason governments like that is because of these tricks. Because whenever there's a complaint, they just add a new layer. Because it doesn't cost them anything because they're not responsible for the consequences. So what we got to do is make them responsible for the consequences.
Yeah,
so,
somebody
for example,
needed
on
to
regulation,
decide. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, somebody needed to decide. Are we going to do this or not do it? If we're not doing it, let's stop talking about it and be done with it.
Yeah. So, for example, what I'd say is on any kind of major regulatory thing, Congress has to hold a roll call vote. Then we're going to know where they stand. So instead of one bunch of members of Congress saying, I'm against regulation killing children, and another bunch saying, I'm against pollution killing children, and the other bunch saying, I'm against regulation killing jobs. They'll vote on the actual regulation, which will obviously involve some trade-offs between jobs and health protection. That's just inevitable. And then we can hold them accountable for the consequences.
Sure.
Now we just have more and more and more study and blah, 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 and we hate the result.
Yeah, because it's becoming, and I mean, I think you hit it early on, it's becoming untenable. We can't just we can't just pay for this bloated disaster going on forever and ever and ever.
Well, that's why only 19% of the public trust the government to do the right thing, which is, I think, the hope for change. When we have such widespread disgust with our federal government, there's a hope we could get something like my Honest Deal Act passed such that they once again be responsible for the consequences and we once again have a government that serves us.
Yeah, I'm totally catching that. When we come back, let's see, we need to talk about the war trick. That is,
sure.
That's on my list. That's trick number five. We're here with our guest, David Schoenbrod. He has written a book called DC Confidential, Inside the Five Tricks of Washington. So you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Feels like these days, unless the government's controlling every minute of your life, they don't love you anymore.
And too much is not enough.
And too much is not enough. God, I've got to tell you, it's enough for me. So, David, what is the, because we covered, okay, the money trick. We did the federal mandate trick. We did regulation trick. What about the debt guarantee trick? Did we do that one?
No, we haven't done that one.
And
we
the war
do that
trick.
Before the war trick.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
Okay. So the debt guarantee trick, this is where the government guarantees the debts of the big, too big to fail banks.
Oh, the one everyone really loves.
Yeah. Now, you might say, well, don't give them any guarantees. The problem is there isn't hardly any politicians that if a bunch of these banks began to totter on the brink of bankruptcy, they'd be willing to let them go over because they'd be scared that there'd be a financial collapse that would sweep everything away. So push comes to shove, whether we agree or not, they're going to bail them out. They're going to pay the debts. So the question, the real question is this. Is the government going to do what any private business would do if asked to guarantee the debts of another company, which is to charge them a fee? And the fee ought to be higher, the riskier the debts are that you're guaranteeing. So if a bank is doing a lot of speculative stuff, they ought to pay a really high fee for their guarantee. And we could do that by using the market to evaluate what it would cost them in the private marketplace to guarantee a small part of their debt. If we did charge such fees to these banks, they couldn't engage in speculation without having to pay a really big fee. So that would give them a profit-based motive not to speculate. Now, what happened then is the government gave them the guarantees for free, which meant they saved a ton of money in terms of having to pay for the guarantees, and it let them borrow all kinds of money to use to speculate. And in good times, that, you know, the speculations turned out great, and they made a fortune. Bad times come along, and they go bust, then we got to bail them out, and we do bail them out. Whether we had to or not, we did, and we would. So, and so the politicians who started these debt guarantees back in the 70s and 80s, they got all kinds of campaign contributions from the banks, because the banks loved it, obviously. But the blame for the bailouts came in 2007 when, 2008, when the, we had to bail them out. So after all this, voters are really angry at Washington, but the people they should be voting, blaming are the people who were in office 20 years earlier. So what does Congress do? It passes the Dodd-Frank Act, claiming there's going to be no more bailouts. It's a lie. The Dodd-Frank Act continues the bailouts. It still doesn't charge an adequate fee. So the debt guarantee continues, debt guarantee trick continues, which means that we're going to have another financial crisis down the road. Meantime, the incumbents in Congress are going to continue to get big campaign contributions from the banks, but the blame for the bailouts are going to come decades from now or a while from now when the next financial crisis hits. We got to stop this.
No kidding.
There's an easy answer. Charge these firms a market-based fee for the debt guarantees. That'll ensure, better than any regulation would, that they're not going to get engaged in wild speculation.
Sure, because it would actually have a financial consequence rather than a free ride.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. We're incentivizing these banks to act wild.
Well, it's kind of funny because we don't do this with children or dogs. I mean, we all know. I mean, you know what I mean? The principles of raising children and raising dogs, and I'm probably other animals, but I know about dogs. We don't do that with either of them. You don't let them just run wild and then expect them to behave because that's silly. So why isn't it silly at other places?
Exactly. Well, it's not just that. It's like letting children run wild and giving them sugar.
Well, there's that. Yeah, that's right. I had one of those sit in front of me in church a few weeks ago, and this lady was giving him all this processed food, red juice. I was like, you're killing me. He's running. He's got a transformer in a car running up and down the middle of the aisle. I'm thinking, really? She had everything but a net. Which is so too bad, because I really was wishing I had a net or a pygmy blow dart gun. But same, because it's so much more subtle than a net.
You have to get a confession for what you were thinking.
I know. I know it's funny. I got nothing out of it. I was just trying to figure out how I could corral the kid without his mother seeing. But no, the same principles apply. And for some reason, it doesn't seem to factor in when we get to government, because that's a different reality.
Like what? Yeah. Well, but now we got a president who says he knows the art of the deal. Well, we're getting a pretty darn crummy deal from these banks. I hope somebody working for President Trump was listening and would have President Trump insist that we get a fair deal from these banks.
Bust out the net.
Exactly.
So if they repealed Dodd-Frank, what would that do for us?
Well, okay, Dodd-Frank does two things. One is it continues... Repealing Dodd-Frank isn't going to stop the debt guarantee trick. Actually, it would mean, because these financial scholars tell me, whatever is on the statute books, if these companies go bust, they're going to get bailed out anyway. So all it would mean was they're getting their debt guarantees for free. Repealing it would be to get rid of the regulations under Dodd-Frank, you know, and some of them are good, some of them aren't so good, but I'm not getting into that. I'm not calling for repealing Dodd-Frank. My Honest Deal Act would require to be done is to charge these too big to fail firms a fee, a market-based fee.
Right.
And then they wouldn't get any, they wouldn't, no more welfare for Wall Street. That's what I'm saying.
Sure. And you probably wouldn't get a lot of people in the country that would be mad about that.
Oh, but the bankers would hate it.
Right, but I mean, regular voters would probably go, gosh,
oh, regular
that makes
voters
sense.
Should love it.
Right.
It would be money for the federal treasury that comes out of the bank, not out of them.
Right.
And the welfare for Wall Street.
Well, I don't think you'd get a lot of argument about that.
Good. At least two of us agree.
Yeah. Bob, what do you think?
I'm in.
Oh, Bob's in. We've got three.
Well, listen, I want you two, at least, to go to my website, which is dc-confidential.org. And under the tab Action there, in just a few minutes, you could write to your members of Congress and tell them you want an honest deal and ask them to pledge to support my Honest Deal Act.
And so the Honest Deal Act is at dc-confidential.org?
Right. There's a description of the act there. There's a tool that will let you quickly write your members of Congress. And there's some online games that show you very graphically how these tricks hurt you and me.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. Sorry, I didn't put that on the
website.
Yeah, I've
never seen anything
like
this before. Yeah.
I will add that to the website for today so people can go there in case they're driving and thinking, well, that's great. I don't have a pen. That's okay. We've got you covered. All right, so we have to one more quick break, and then we're going to talk about the war trick.
Okay.
Because that's our fifth one. I can't believe it. We got it all in. We're really organized today. See, a lot of days it's just like lots of catch up. Not today. Today we're on track. It's because Bill's not here. We're going to blame Bill. Bill goes under the bus.
Never miss an opportunity.
Exactly.
Never had a doubt.
Good song for a political topic. Our guest today is David Schoenbrod. He has written a book called DC Confidential, Inside the Five Tricks of Washington, and we have laid them out for you. We have the money trick, the debt guarantee trick, the federal mandate trick, the regulation trick, and now war, our favorite topic.
Okay, so this
Enter
trick,
David.
Like the others, began in the middle of the 20th century. For the first 160 years of our nation, the president couldn't go to war without getting Congress to approve, either by declaring war or by getting an explicit statute from Congress, you know, explicitly approving the war. But that changed in Korea, where Truman went into Korea in 1950 without getting congressional approval. He said, well, it was just a police action. 33,000 Americans died there. The public didn't like the idea of the president going to war without being clear with the country and getting approval of Congress. So Congress in 1973 passed something called the War Powers Act. And it basically said that before going to war, the president had to go to Congress and get a vote of approval. And if he didn't, if Congress voted it down, the war had to stop. So it turned out there was a loophole in the War Powers Act, and Congress and the president together collude so Congress doesn't have to vote on controversial wars. So if the war turns out to be popular, the members of Congress get to vote, march in the victory parade, and if it turns out to be unpopular, they put all the blame on the president. And the president, for his part, her part, gets the ability to go to war without getting approval from Congress. And this is just, it's undemocratic, but it's also bad because we end up getting into war, into wars where the country's divided.
Yeah.
And so we end up fighting with each other rather than fighting our enemies. So there's a very simple way of fixing the War Powers Act so it actually is binding on the president, which would then mean we would only go to war if we get, if we agree with each other. But Congress doesn't want it to be fixed because they don't want to be responsible.
Yeah, and I don't, that doesn't really make any sense at the end of the day because that takes the people out of the equation. The people's representatives are not voting on something that is going to affect all of them.
Exactly, which is exactly why the representatives don't want to do anything about it. But anyway, so there's an easy fix to every one of these tricks if we can get Congress to do it. And I think we can. And the reason I think we can is, first of all, a lot of us are disgusted. Like, you know, only 19% trust the government to do the right thing most of the time. The rest of us don't think so. We want to drain the swamp, as so many did, either voting for Trump or Bernie Sanders. What's keeping the water in the swamp are the tricks. So we need to push them out. And there are things we have going in our favor besides the fact that many of us are disgusted. One of them is that a lot of officials actually are hurt by the war, by these tricks. Like the governors and the mayors, they're hurt by the federal mandate trick.
Sure.
And actually, when you think about it from the point of view of the representatives, they don't gain either. I mean, think about their life. You know, my impression is that many of them, even though we think of them as evil people or it's easy to demonize them, think about it from their point of view. Everybody else in Congress is playing tricks, so if I don't, I look like I'm a bad guy. I'm the messenger bearing the bad tidings. I'll get blamed. Or if my party stops the tricks, then the other party's going to do better at the election because the tricks are politically advantageous.
Sure.
So what I'm saying...
And you have 535 people, so of course, you know, everybody isn't everybody. And, you know, you always have different people doing different things. However, in a system that... cumbersome. I mean, it's pretty hard to just launch out on your own and be the, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to fix with a handful of people.
So instead of hating the members of Congress for playing the tricks, we got to change the game, change the rules of the game. And that's what the Honest Deal Act is designed to do. And I think that if a number of us begin to tell our members of Congress, no, we don't want to be promised something for nothing. We want an honest deal. I think many of them are going to be responsive. And then also I think that the day is going to come when somebody's going to run for president on the basis that they want to stop the tricks. And I think that would be a pretty effective platform for a presidential candidate. And so I think the more of us get behind this thing, the better chance we have of prevailing. And I got forwards for my book written by Howard Dean on the left and Mike Lee on the right. This is a platform that could sell across the political spectrum.
Sure.
So,
well, I think Trump
I would urge
did.
Your listeners to go to my website and ask their members of Congress to take the Honest Deal Pledge.
Yeah, and the other thing is too. I think that Donald Trump really kind of ran. I mean, I don't know if you read your book, but this has been a large part of his platform.
Well, he talked about the swamp, but you know. So far, only so far, because he's only been in for a while, he really hasn't done anything against any of the tricks. Now, he might. I hope he does. I hope his people, I have people that are trying to talk to his people, but...
your people are talking to his people?
So far, I don't know. The jury's out, but he says he's... I mean, at this point, I don't know if he's going to be a swamp drainer or a swamp dweller.
Sure.
But the chances of his... becoming a swamp drainer are going to be greater if people go in and start asking their people we elect to stop the tricks.
Sure. And, you know, the other thing, too, people need to get a little bit more plugged in on what's actually happening and maybe a little dose of reality that, I mean, I was at a town hall last week.
Yeah.
And there was a kid, 12 years old maybe, I'm just kind of guessing based on height, but, you know, he was an elementary school or early junior high kid. And the comment was made that, you know, Washington shouldn't be in charge of everything. That was that was one of the answers. The congressman said, I'm not in favor of the government being in charge of everything. And this kid was talking to his mom. He was quiet. I mean, he didn't yell out or anything, but he says, well, he doesn't really know what he's talking about, because that's why we have a government. They're supposed to tell us what to do.
Ah.
And I thought, oh my gosh. I mean, so that's kind of, we have a segment of our society that believes that and is teaching their children that. So they'll be growing up like looking for government to do everything. Super spooky.
I think what happened around the time the tricks began is our view of government would change. Our government used to be, we used to think of our government as a way that the people could take care of themselves. Now we think of government as this great father in the sky who's handing down sugar plums.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And if they talk about reforming anything, or they talk about, you know, maybe we need to figure out if this program can last forever. I mean, they put these things in place, but you got to pay for them, and you put the next thing in place, you got to pay for it. So as the budget becomes unsustainable, if you even mention
it is unsustainable,
yeah. But if you even mention that, you are, I mean, you know, literally, people are like, if they take a look at Social Security, that's genocide. I'm like, wow. People who've actually died because of genocide probably roll over in their graves, but
yeah,
yeah. The citizens have to be okay with that too. Getting honest,
I agree.
I think that was fun, and that was a very fast hour.
Yeah, I enjoyed it very much. Are we off the air now?
No, we're still on here, but we're almost done. We got
well,
like,
then there's a chance to ask your readers, buy my book, please.
Yeah, and it's all on there. It is on it's on your website at dc-confidential.org. And the rest of you, send the show. It'll be there commercial-free here in another hour or two at wethepeopleradio.us. Our guest, David Schoenbrod, has been here gratefully for the full hour. Thanks a million.
I enjoy talking with you, Aaron.
Thanks very much. We hope to hear from you again. Let us know
okay,
your progress.
Thank you.
All right. Everybody have a great Sunday. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Aaron. This is KCNR Shasta Redding.